Good morning, church. It's good to see you all again, and it's good to be back in back home. Went on vacation, and the vacation was good, but I'm really glad to see all of you here and be with my family here as well. This morning, we're going to be talking about relationships between husbands and wives, and I have to start off by saying that it's a little awkward for me to talk about marriage relationships, having never been in one myself. And when I preach or when I talk, it's a lot easier for me to discuss things that I at least have some conceptual and personal experience in. Because conclusions that you make can be then backed up by your own personal experience and other things in being in that. And I had a conversation with another preacher, John Kilgore, several years ago, who's a preacher who himself has never been married and I asked him how he felt about preaching about marriage and topics concerning marriage, even though he had never been married. And he told me that he just follows the examples of the two greatest bachelors in the Bible, and that's Jesus and Paul, who both also were never married, but both did talk about marriage and about marriage relationships. And so it's in that vein that I'm going to approach that topic this morning. Having said that, we do have a marriage class, a marriage seminar coming up on Thursday, has already been said, and that's going to be a 2-hour Thursday night at Wichita State University West Campus in Mays at 7 p.m. on Thursday, and I would highly encourage you to consider going to that, because it's being taught by someone who has been married, and by David, and presented, and it's excellent. I sat through it when we did it in Valley Center, and I know several of you sat in on that class when it was a longer class here several quarters ago now. But it's excellent, and if there's obviously so many different things that you could talk about marriage and marriage relationships that can't be covered in one sermon altogether, but we're going to talk about a few things about what Paul, or about what Jesus, Paul, and Peter, some of the things that they say concerning marriage. Now, we're going to start with Jesus, and one of the times that Jesus is confronted with a question concerning marriage, he's asked questions by the Pharisees concerning when and under what circumstances a divorce might be granted under the law of Moses. And Jesus, after being asked this question, begins with the statement of "in the beginning." Jesus, when asked this question concerning the minutiae of divorce and how it is applied through the law of Moses, he answers and says, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, 'Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.' So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate." Jesus, in his answer concerning marriage relationships and how we are to approach marriage relationships and understand them, is to go back to the beginning, to the first marriage union, when God created the first man and woman. And Jesus appeals all the way back to Genesis chapter 2. And in Genesis chapter 2, we have Genesis chapter 1 is a general story of the creation of the universe in 6 days. And then in Genesis chapter 2, it gets into a little bit more in depth about the creation of man and woman. And so man is created and he's told to name all the animals. And he goes through all the animals. And in part, because God says that he doesn't have a helper that's suitable to him. And so Adam begins naming all these animals and goes through. And after he's named all the animals, he still hasn't found a helper that is suitable to him. And so God puts Adam into a deep sleep and removes a rib from Adam's side, and from that rib he creates the woman Eve. And in Genesis chapter 2 and 23, Adam says, upon waking and seeing Eve, he says, "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." And then the commentary that follows is what Jesus quotes in verse 24, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." It is because of this union, because of the connection that Adam and Eve have with one another, therefore there is this marriage union, and what is made up of the marriage union. And I want to notice a couple things from this account in Genesis as it informs us about what the marriage relationship is all about. First, I want us to consider woman is created from man. Not only for man, but woman is created from man. And she's directly taken from a rib of Adam and created. And Adam then responds when he sees her, "She is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." The connection between man and woman goes deep, goes more than just some superficial thing. She is a part of man. Woman is a part of man. There is a need for, and it also goes into this idea of completeness. In order to be complete, there needs to be both. But then also consider the opposite side of this. This isn't right here in Genesis. This goes into chapter 3 when it gets into the woman giving birth and everything. But not only does woman come from man, but man comes from woman. Adam didn't come, but every other man that came subsequent after Adam had to be born from woman. So out of woman comes man, out of man comes woman. Both genders are linked to one another, eternally bound to one another, and dependent upon one another. That's the first thing to get from this account in Genesis, that one isn't really above the other, one isn't superior to the other, both need each other, and both were created for each other. And then concerning the statement that it says, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh," is that marriage is more than just two people living together. And marriage is more than two people who love each other. Marriage is more than two people pursuing the same goals in life with each other. Marriage is becoming one. The ideal, as it starts in the beginning, is that in marriage, the husband and the wife no longer are two, but are one entity, one flesh. And it's where they find that deep connection in marriage that fits them together in perfect harmony and perfect agreement. And every marriage is like that, right? Well, no. I would actually say that no marriage is like that, but that's the ideal of the marriage. That is what we should be striving for. And then also on top of that is that marriages, from experience, marriages don't just become perfect, or they don't just work out and become this ideal marriage that's described in Genesis. The uniting of two different people into one takes work, takes commitment, and also takes a desire to do so. So, building off of that passage in Genesis that we read, Paul also makes use of that passage in Genesis to make a different point in Ephesians that we read. And I want to go ahead and just read through that whole passage in Ephesians again, Ephesians chapter 5. And actually, I'm going to step back and read also the part concerning wives. So Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 22, it says, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church. He himself being the Savior of the body, but as the church is subject to Christ, so also wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water and the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband." I want to focus at verses 31 and 32. Paul then quotes Genesis 2:24, that a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And Paul says that there is a mystery here in Genesis, that it wasn't just speaking about marriage and the marriage relationship and the ideal marriage relationship, but it's also speaking about Christ and the church. The ideal marriage union that was set up in Genesis is itself an image of the relationship that Christ has with the church. And the relationship between Christ and the church can be understood in some ways as a marriage. And in turn, if you want to improve your marriage, if you don't have that ideal marriage and you want to strive to that ideal marriage, then the model that you need to look at is to model your marriage after Christ's relationship with the church. And so we're going to take this passage in Ephesians, and then also a passage in Colossians and a passage in 1 Peter that all talk about marriage relationships and relationships between wives and husbands, and see what we can learn about Jesus' relationship with the church, and then also how to apply it to relationships between husbands and wives. Now, in each instance, in the Ephesians and Colossians and 1 Peter passages, they all three start out talking to the wives first and then move to the husbands. So I'm not going to break that tradition. I'm going to go ahead or break that pattern. I'm going to go ahead and start with instructions to wives. And the passages I want us to consider with instructions to wives are in verse 22 through 24 of Ephesians 5 that we just read. "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands." Then in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 18, Paul says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." And then in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, Peter says, "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry, or of clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. Now there's a word here used, and it's the same Greek word, it's different in these translations, but it's the same Greek word in every single instance, and it's a word that has been abused by preachers and teachers and husbands more so than any other in relation to instruction on marriage. And it's a word that is so abused that when we talk about this word in relationship to wives, it's like just that word becomes nails on the chalkboard to so many people. And that word is submission. And I want to be clear that the Greek word here that is used as translated as submission or being subject to can mean to obey, as in putting one's subjection under a ruler. And the word that Paul and Peter both use in these three instances can mean that. And so the abuse has been that with that husbands treat their wives like servants, or they treat their wives like peons that have to answer to their every whim and carnal desire, and then they say, well, I'm the head and you're supposed to be in submission to me. Now let's be clear that Paul qualifies what kind of submission he's talking about in the discussion that he has in Ephesians. In Ephesians, he says to wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. This is the first qualification that he puts on the kind of submission that wives are to have. It's to be as to the Lord. Now that being said, also, some people see Christ or see the Lord in that manner as some dictator making decrees on high and making demands and being unrelenting. And it's not for this lesson, but if you see Christ in that light as this dictator coming down and making unreasonable demands upon you, then that's a very limiting and distorted view of Christ. And that's not the way that we are to submit to Christ. But again, within the context that Paul puts here, it's not submitting to Christ as a peon submits to a king, but it's submitting to Christ as various parts of the body submit to the head or submit to the brain. Paul goes on to explain in Ephesians 5 and verse 29, "For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body." The relationship here is, in terms of submission, is that the church submits to Jesus because Jesus, as the head, supplies nourishment and cherishes the church. Jesus cares for the church as he would his own body. And Paul even says the church is Jesus' body. And so because the church is Jesus' body, Jesus is not going to abuse his body. He's not going to overwork his body. He's not going to make his body do something that it cannot do. He's not going to make his body do something that is wrong for it to do. Instead, Jesus would love his body. He would cherish it. He would take care of it. He would protect it and provide for its every need. And in fact, that is what Jesus does for the church. He loves it, cherishes it, takes care of it, provides for it. And within that context, and within this idea of the sphere of love and nourishment, we as the church willingly submit to Jesus Christ. Because, and in this term, there's another way to translate the word submission, or to understand the Greek word that it comes from, is the idea of putting oneself under someone else's care. And this is the kind of submission that Paul is talking about. It's not the submission of somebody putting themselves under a king. It's someone putting themselves under someone else's care. And so in putting oneself under Jesus' care and love and nourishment, and when he provides us with all we need, who wouldn't want to continue in that? Who wouldn't want to submit themselves to that? And this is the idea of a wife's submission. Remember, back in Genesis, it's to be the two are to become one flesh. And one flesh cannot have two heads. But so many times marriage relationships are like that. They're trying to be one with two heads. And for all sorts of reasons that we're not going to get into, that are at least described within the Bible, the husband is given the place as the head in a marriage relationship. But we see that that is not to say that he is to be a dictator or a king or something else like that. He is a head in the same vein that Jesus is a head. In the fact that the husband is to, as the head, love and protect and nourish his wife as he would his own body. And it's in that sense that under the protection and love and nourishment of her husband, that a woman submits to his leadership or puts herself under his care. And to also talk about this, right before he talks about a wife submitting to her husband, he says in the brief verse right before it, Ephesians 5:21, talking of everyone who is in Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. We're all to submit to one another, and that also means husbands to wives. Husbands are also to submit themselves to their wives, because we are to submit ourselves to one another. And we can see this. A husband is to love his wife as Jesus loves the church. And I want to take a little bit of an aside and do a tangent and just ask, how did Jesus love the church? What is the example by which a husband is supposed to treat his wife? It's how Jesus loved the church. How did Jesus love the church? Jesus loved the church by giving up his will completely for God's will. So the first thing for a husband to do is to give up his own will for God's will. Jesus loved the church by giving up everything of himself, even his own life. And a husband needs to be willing to do that for his wife as well. And Jesus provided an example, many examples, but provided an example of what it means to be the head. And to be the head does not mean to be the head honcho, the big cheese, the guy who gets everything that he wants and doesn't have to do anything about it. Jesus' example of headship is washing his disciples' feet. And this is a very easy thing for me to ask husbands, being a single man myself, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyway. Husbands, when was the last time you doted on your wife in the same manner that Jesus washed his disciples' feet? When have you done that for your wife recently? When have you served your wife as Jesus serves the church? Jesus' example of leadership and headship is service. And so, in the idea of a wife's submission is not completely within her serving the husband. In fact, I would say it's the other way around. Peter adds a few extra ideas before we end the discussion about instructions to wives. He adds a few ideas in about the wives' relationship in the marriage, or the wife's role in the marriage relationship. He says, likewise, wives, be subject, it's the same word, submission, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, he's talking about husbands that, you know, aren't Christians or husbands that don't follow, don't do the things that husbands ought to do. Husbands that don't follow in Jesus' footsteps. So that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry or clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. Because this is one of the questions that comes up. If a woman is supposed to be submissive to her husband, what if... And when we put up the ideal and we say, okay, this is what a husband is supposed to be. As I put up, a husband is supposed to be giving of himself to his wife. And in that relationship, I think it becomes really easy for a woman to say, a wife to say, I can be in submission to that. But what happens when the husband isn't? What happens when the husband isn't playing his role the way he's supposed to be? Peter says that if you want to make a positive influence in your marriage relationship, then you need to do your part. And that in doing so, and the wife doing her part at least, she can positively affect her husband and possibly even move a husband to do his part even when he's unwilling. Now, Peter doesn't say that there's 100% guarantee, and I'm not saying that if you do that, then you're, you know, that somehow your marriage will, for a wife, that if you start doing your part, that somehow the marriage is automatically going to become better. But Peter is saying, you focus on the spiritual things. You focus on what is truly valuable about you as a woman and you as a wife. And what is valuable about you is your inner grace and inner beauty that God has given every single woman. And he puts in that idea of, you know, don't be focused on the physical things. Don't be concerned with adorning yourself with gold and jewelry and braiding your hair. Now, when Peter says that, he's not saying don't do that. Because, and the reason I know that is because Peter was a married man and he doesn't want to die. And that was a joke, but nobody laughed. It's very serious. You know, Peter is not so stupid as to say to wives, don't wear jewelry. He was married. He knows how, you know, he knows that that's important. But he's saying what is really important and the way that you can move your marriage forward is to be the beautiful woman that God has already made you to be. You don't need all those extra things to be beautiful in God's sight and for your husband to notice and to want to be, in part, want to be the husband that he ought to be. And in this discussion, it's been my observation that sometimes when husbands don't take the headship role the way that they're supposed to, sometimes women get understandably frustrated with that, and wives get understandably frustrated with it, and instead of maybe prodding their husband to take a leadership role or waiting for him to do it, they'll just go and they'll take it over and say, well, something's got to get done, so I better go and start doing this. And Peter says that that's not... that Peter doesn't give that as the option for improving your marriage. That's just going out of your role. The way that Peter says for a woman, if she has a husband that is obstinate or isn't following the way that he wants to, or that he should be, the way that she should react to that is to just do her part, at least, and let that influence her husband gradually. So now that we've talked about wives, and we've talked about husbands a little bit, let's finish up our discussion on husbands and what husbands ought to be doing. A few verses from Ephesians chapter 5, 25, 28, and 33. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. And let each one of you love his wife as himself. Colossians 3 and 19, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. And 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So let's consider what husbands are told to do in those three passages. Husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. And that includes loving your wife as yourself. If you don't like being bossed about, then don't boss your wife. If you do things and say things to your wife that you wouldn't accept in a heartbeat, why do you expect your wife to accept that? Love your wife as yourself. In Colossians, he says, do not be harsh with your wife. I understand also, you know, especially after years and years and years of being together with one another, you see this. I see this in a lot of marriages. People end up being curt and being harsh, and sometimes that comes just, you know, with time and becoming callous to certain things and other things like that. Do not be harsh with your wife. Peter says to honor your wife. And he says, as the weaker vessel. And that's not, I don't think that is to say anything bad about women, because, and not to say that women are somehow inferior to men. It's just that women are different. They need different things than men do. And they need to be honored as the weaker vessel. I've heard it explained in some different ways, and I'm not exactly sure which way to take it. But one of the ways is to think of something precious and valuable that is also fragile, and to treat your wife with the honor that, as something that could easily break if you're not careful. But it definitely doesn't mean that she's inferior, because Peter goes on to say that, remember that your wife is your fellow heir. And there are a lot of things to consider about that. The fact that you're the head of the marriage does not make you better. Does not mean that you are above your wife in your relationship. In fact, you are a fellow heir with your wife. You are on the same level. When two become one flesh, they become one flesh. The husband doesn't become slightly more one flesh than the woman. Remember, your wife is your fellow heir. So love your wife as yourself. Do not be harsh with your wife. Honor your wife. And remember that she's your fellow heir. And to treat your wife any less than that is to do harm to yourself and your relationship with God. And when we consider that the husband is the head of the marriage, if you treat your wife in a way that Jesus does not treat the church, that if you do not treat your wife as your own body, it would be like your brain commanding your body to hurt itself, to treat itself badly, to beat itself up, or to take a knife and start stabbing it. If you treat your wife badly, or you treat your wife as someone who is not a fellow heir, as someone below you, then you're only really you're doing harm to her, but you're also doing harm to yourself. It doesn't matter if the head only commands the body to hurt the body and don't do anything to the head, because if the Because the head still feels it. The brain is connected to the body. The brain feels everything, all the hurts and all the pains and all the things of the body, if it's working right. And if the body dies, so does the head. So you can't treat your wife poorly and think that you're going to get ahead, because you won't. God didn't give you a wife to be abused or to be pushed around or to be a lapdog for you. And going back to Genesis, Adam had already named all the animals, including the dog, and God said that that wasn't suitable. So don't make your wife into one. Your wife is of the same flesh as you. Your wife is one with you and a fellow heir. And Peter says that if you don't treat your wife that way, then your prayers may be hindered. It's not only about destroying your marriage, but it's also if you don't treat what God has given you with the honor and respect that your wife deserves, then your prayers are also going to be hindered. Your relationship with God is going to be hindered. And so basically what it comes down to is that how you treat your wife directly affects you. So love your wife as Christ loved the church. God gave you both, husbands and wives. God has given you your husband, or God has given you your wife, to each other. And so you all ought to respect the gift that God gave you. Whether He gave you a husband or He gave you a wife, whichever side of the marriage equation that you're on, respect the gift that God gave you. Because you're of the same flesh. The two have been made one. And so for husbands and wives, the message is to follow Christ's example. And to become the ideal marriage as it was mentioned in the beginning. A marriage of mutual direction and of union, as there is union between Jesus and His church. And I'm going to leave you with that this morning and say that we always leave this opportunity at the end of the lesson, that if there is anyone who needs to respond to the gospel call, to become a child of God, to be saved from their sins, there is an opportunity right now. If you want that relationship with God, or if you need the prayers of the congregation, or if we can help you and you want our help or our prayers, we're completely willing to help you in anything that you need. And if that is the case, I would ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.
Why keep Jesus waiting in the cold?
What?